IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a podcast on everything from employment to aircraft carriers.
We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Number Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs.
I'm Yazad, an economist.
And I'm Shambhavi, a cell biologist.
Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. I'm Aditya, standing in for Shambhavi. Today's episode, we're going to talk about Maldives, where India has agreed to extend a line of credit to build a new cricket stadium. And I'm sure Maldives is important for some other reasons. And to tell me about that, I have with me Shibani and Manoj. So let's start with you, Shibani. Can you tell us about Modi's visit and what it meant?
Right. So this was the first foreign visit that the Prime Minister made after taking oath for the second time. And while the cricket stadium and training for the Maldivian people in cricket made a lot of news, there were a lot of other projects that were discussed, including a crucial coastal surveillance radar system that would enhance maritime security in the Indian Ocean region. So that was a big topic of discussion.
And that comes at the same time where we are reading these reports of a Chinese weather monitoring system being scrapped by the government. Although it's not a formally scrapped so far.
Not formally scrapped yet.
But we're reading these reports of this happening. So yeah, I think this is sort of a complete shift. I mean, we saw the shift last year once Ibrahim Soli became the president, that the Maldives would turn away from China and they turned towards India. And I think this is Modi's visit is an extension to that. And I think some of the bits that he spoke about, I mean, he was asked to address the parliament, if I'm correct, right? And some of the stuff that he spoke about, where he spoke about the Indian Ocean, the Indo-Pacific is what he called the entire region. He spoke about the Maldives being a friend and India being a friend and the idea that there are no big and small friends and there are just friends. So all hitting the right notes, try and get, you know, the right kind of traction over there. And yeah, I mean, a lot of it now depends on how we follow through on this. Because a lot of Indian diplomacy in the neighborhood requires us to also back up our words with not just concrete action and projects, but also delivering them on time, funding them accordingly. So let's see if the cricket stadium gets built and let's see if we end up seeing Virat Kohli playing in the Maldives.
Okay. And I just want to ask both of you, why is Maldives important, A, to India and B, to China? So I just... Shibani, can you tell us why it matters? What happens in the Maldives?
What happens in the Maldives? I'd really like to go and find out. but Maldives is strategically located in the Indian Ocean and it is an important country for both India and China. And as much as the Prime Minister would like to say that it is a deeply valued historical friendship that we are trying to build, there is a lot of strategic and national security importance coming from the Maldives.
Yeah, I mean, one of the clear things is that Shibani's noted is that the location. So it's in the center of the Indian Ocean, there are lots of trade routes that pass through there. So that's one part of it. The other part is obviously the issue of potential for terrorism. So two of the biggest issues for India when it comes to the Maldives is obviously the role of China because of Maldives' location. And secondly is the threat of terrorism because a sizable number of people in the Maldives have been attracted to Islamist terrorism. And this is something that's been noted by the country's leadership. And that's one problem. As we've sort of over the years, we've read about the Islamic State's influence in the Maldives. So these are sort of two of the big issues from a security standpoint, which matter. From the other point of view is that given its location, there is obviously a lot of jostling between India and China, given China's increased influence in Maldives. And that is the other thing that India really needs to look at. I mean, over the last few years, we saw the shift in the country's policy under Yameen, under Abdullah Yameen, and the increased amounts of loans that the country took from the Chinese. I mean, at the moment, it's estimated at something like $3 billion is what the Maldives' debt is. I think the Prime Minister, during his visit, promised a $1.7 billion worth of investments or something to that effect. So that will probably go to address some of the debt crisis that the Maldives faces. So I think it's important from those points of view, but also from the point of view of just how the region starts to look at India. The Maldives was deeply turning towards the Chinese. There was this quite a sharp turn towards the Chinese. And that starts to erode not just Indian influence in that country, but also the sense of India being the dominant power in the region. And it's potentially can then eventually create sort of certain domino effect with other countries also seeing India's influence and India's strength in the region being diminished. So in that sense, the shift in the Maldives election that we saw, the MDP winning not just the presidential election, but also then the parliamentary elections, and then subsequently pledging that they are going to review all these deals that were done with the Chinese because there was tremendous corruption. It also then tells you that India still is a dominant power in the region. It commands a lot of influence, and India as a model for development is still attractive to some of these countries in the region. And sort of the shift in Maldives represents that also. So there are these three broad elements that I would look at. One is the location of the Maldives. The second is the issue of terrorism. And the third is how it impacts the broader region from an Indian perspective. And those would be the three broad things that I would look at.
Yeah, I'm glad you both brought up geography, because Maldives is a small country, but if you look at its exclusive economic zone, it's actually pretty huge.
Yeah.
And it also sits astride this massive trade route, which I think takes about $18 trillion worth of shipping annually. And in fact, China's weather station was completely coincidentally located right next to that trade route. But I just want to ask you both, should India's fortunes in the Indian Ocean be contingent on who is in power in these countries? Or should we build deeper linkages with these countries that make it much easier to handle these shifts?
I agree with you. I think India should stop, or at least invest less in political personalities and their careers, and invest a lot more in setting up institutions in the neighborhood and countries that it considers important for its national security. Leaders are going to come and go. Right now, the Maldivian leadership is friendly with India, so you see a lot more interaction, and I think New Delhi is a little more at ease than it was, say, a year ago. But that can change quickly. So you need to have stronger institutions running in those countries that will work in your favor.
Yeah, I agree. You need to have stronger institutions. But I also think that there is something to be learned from the Chinese. So Henry Paulson, the former Treasury Secretary of the U.S., when speaking about the U.S.-China trade dispute, he spoke about the need to do certain things together which are easy to do so that you get easy wins. And as you stack up the wins which are visible, you can actually build a relationship. I think I look at this cricket stadium in that context. If you look around South Asia, there are very few displays of Indian activity in this region in terms of infrastructure projects or things like that, which are visible and which then become symbols of friendship and so on. In the Maldives, the Chinese tried to do something like this with the friendship bridge that they built. Whether that is a bridge that's going nowhere is a different question, but I think this cricket stadium sort of does that, right? It shows something visible, it shows something tangible, and it then becomes this sort of symbol of friendship between the two countries. So at one level, yes, there is an institutional linkage that you need to build. And I guess the fact that despite Yameen's overwhelming authority and despite his control over just about everything in the country, he was booted out, tells you that some of the sort of institutional linkages, people-to-people linkages between India and the Maldives continue. The other thing that this visit of the Prime Minister sort of brought us was there's supposed to be a ferry service between Kochi and Malé, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
That's another thing that, again, connects you physically and it builds deeper people-to-people linkages. And I think those are all good things and India should be doing that. Because its rival in the region, the Chinese, are doing the exact same thing. A lot of Maldivian students study in China. The Chinese have funded a lot of public works projects in the Maldives. And I think those are the things sort of that eventually are visible and tangible. And that makes a difference.
If I could just add to Manoj's point, people-to-people contact, especially in terms of cricket, there is no rival to India in the region when it comes to cricket. And I think it's great that you are extending or using that to your strength, because it's not just about building a stadium, which is tangible sort of promise that you're making. But I think there's a proposal to train the cricketers in the Maldives, also train coaches and, umpires and bring them to come and play in India. So increasing people-to-people contact is, it's something that we can do easily, like Manoj said, and we should definitely pay more attention to that.
Yeah, I'm reminded of how India helped build the parliament in Afghanistan. So that went with the Indian brand, as does building a cricket stadium. But I'm guessing India can't really compete with China on infrastructure, even if it gets in Japanese capital and so on. So what are the ways in which you think India can keep up with China?
Okay, let's look at this. So when the new government came into power, in November, the foreign minister of the Maldives came to India. And in one of his public comments at the Maldivian embassy, he was speaking about, you know, obviously journalists in India will ask him about China and the decision to what would be the relationship between the Maldives and China going forward. And his response was, yes, our policy is India first. But his response was also, look, China has been a generous friend. And our relationship with China is important, and it's an important country, and therefore we'll be looking at it in that manner. So I think what the Maldives is going to do, despite whatever the press in India might presume, is play both sides to its benefit. It obviously sees the benefit in terms of its deeper alignment with India, because it's not just about money and proximity, it's also about certain set of values which India represents. And you could see that distinction. This government is very different from the previous government. The previous government was far more authoritarian, and that was seen as imbibing very Chinese values, Chinese governance values. And this government is very different. So I think that is one of the things that the Maldives will do, where it will try and sort of play off both sides against each other, or at least to its maximum benefit, if not against each other. And I think both sides are aware of it. What the Indians can do, what we can do, is that we can try and build more credibility by delivering on some of the projects that we're doing. I don't think we need to compete with the Chinese dollar for dollar, because that's a foolhardy thing to do. What you need to do is you need to build quick wins and you need to build credibility through that. And you need to support the democratic process in Maldives. And I don't think we need to be shy about that. We need to support the democratic process in the Maldives. We need to not be arrogant as a big power. Those are some very simple things that we need to do. And I think that will work in our interest. Because I think the Maldives is also, at least this leadership, is very aware of what overbearing Chinese influence could bring. And I think that works to our advantage.
Yeah, I think that making a strong preference for democracy in our own region is not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It might not work with, say, Myanmar, but with a lot of other countries in our region, it works. I want to widen the scope of this and bring in Sri Lanka. Where do you see that going?
Again, from the Maldives, the Prime Minister is, I think, next stop was Sri Lanka. Again, a big diplomatic gesture. And he also visited the site of the Easter attacks. So in terms of diplomacy and like optics, I think India's making the right moves. He also, in the speech, the Indian Prime Minister mentioned that India and Sri Lanka should collaborate in countering terrorism, and that terrorism is the biggest enemy in the region. So seem to be making the right moves, in my opinion.
I think, again, with Sri Lanka also, our challenges in the region are very similar, right? Our challenges in the region are security and development needs in those and other countries. And in many of these cases, you can find complementarities. So I think it's a great thing. It's very interesting that he chose Maldives and Sri Lanka, given that these are the two countries where we've seen the most largest increase in Chinese influence in these countries. And also in South Asia, these are the two countries where we've had the biggest conversation about Chinese debt. So going there and talking about sustainable development, talking about democracy, talking about terrorism and the need for multi-faith societies to sort of stay together, all of that works to our advantage.
Absolutely. I want to ask you both, do you think it's possible for India to come to some sort of informal understanding with China, where India says, okay, we'll just compete with you fair and square on routine economic issues, but the minute you do something dual use, all options are on the table?
I think the difficult thing in that is, what do you call dual use? I mean, everything is dual use in many ways. So it's really, really difficult to actually have that understanding and to be able to verify things. I think the Americans have tried that with the Chinese and it's not really worked, because the nature of technology is such that everything can potentially be of dual use. I mean, I was reading source-based reports from Indian diplomats essentially saying that, oh, even roads are dual use.
Sure.
So where do you draw that distinction, and how do you then go about doing that is going to be really complicated. And the Chinese have shown that they are quite adept at making certain commitments and then finding their way around them. So I would think that that would be really difficult. I think what would be more feasible is to actually have, not red lines, but to actually have certain parameters where at least there is a better communication as to why certain projects are being undertaken or how they are being undertaken. And there's a certain amount of transparency in that. I think if that's there, and if India has a reasonably good relationship with the country in which a project is being carried out, we're good. Obviously, along with that, you end up developing your own capacity and capability to be able to monitor what's going on. I think those are the three things. I don't think we can end up in, we can have agreement with the Chinese about dual use projects and say, well, you violated this, because the Chinese will shift the ball very easily.
Yeah. So, Manoj, you know, the narrative in India has been that China has failed to communicate adequately about its intentions in the Indian Ocean region, that India was open to a dialogue about maritime security 10 years back and got no response from China, that China did not reach out to India on BRI. How would the Chinese see this?
So, 10 years ago, I think China's sort of approach to the Indian Ocean was very, very limited. I think if you just go back 10 years ago, that's when China starts its first anti-piracy missions in the Gulf of Aden. So that's its first sort of outreach beyond its periphery in many ways, or at least in terms of a significant outreach. Sort of fast forward to today and to BRI, when BRI was launched. I think one of the reasons why the Chinese were unable to communicate with India what they meant by what they were doing was had a lot to do with their own confusion with regard to what BRI meant. I mean, I was in Beijing when BRI was launched, and really nobody knew what BRI meant. And that was one thing. CPEC was launched separately, and I don't think the Chinese anticipated such a strong Indian response, because their argument was that, look, this is not passing through what India holds right now. It's passing through Pakistan-occupied Kashmir, and we've anyway built the Karakoram Highway, so why is there an issue? And it's just development project. So they, I think, genuinely didn't expect, I mean, however facetious you may find these arguments, they genuinely did not expect India to respond in the way it did. And when India responded in the way it did, the Chinese did try to explain. So actually, if you look in 2017, when the first Belt and Road Forum was being held, the Chinese sort of start to go out of their way to say, well, we can call it something else and we can say, you know, rename CPEC. We could do this, we could do that. And every time the ambassador says something, the foreign ministry says, no, not really. I think I would take the ambassador's word at value, and I would say that, yes, there was an intention to try and renegotiate this. And even my conversations with, say, Chinese academics, think tankers, and some folks in the policy zone, there is an interest in actually getting India on board. And I think they realized that they messed up by not communicating effectively with the Indians. The interest to get India on board exists even today. And that is what you're seeing. So post-Wuhan, you saw Modi and Xi Jinping talking about a project in a third country, Afghanistan, which didn't end up being the kind of project that we think it ended up being. I presume that will change come this winter when she visits India.
Yeah.
I presume there will be a project that will be announced in a third country. The issue is in which part, whether in South Asia or whether somewhere else. India is fairly guarded about South Asia, but it depends on where we end up doing that thing. So I think the Chinese do realize that they missed an opportunity in actually engaging India. On the maritime front, I think there is, from an Indian point of view, there is a logic in engaging China, because it's going to become this big elephant in the elevator, and you're going to eventually have to talk to them, because if there are more Chinese ships in the Indian Ocean, you're going to have to eventually talk to them to avoid certain unforeseen incidents. But I think India would prefer having that as limited as possible, having a limited engagement as possible on need basis, as opposed to structurally inviting China to become a partner in the Indian Ocean region to maintain security. I think India would also want to avoid that. And I think part of the effort to upscale our capacity, naval capacity, to conduct drills with the Japanese, the Americans, the Australians, the Singaporeans, the Indonesians, is about that also, is that we build linkages with other guys also.
Okay, you can tell me why I'm being completely parochial Indian, but if I was sitting in Beijing, I would think that I would want to reassure these Indians, at least for the moment, about my intentions in the Indian Ocean region. Why hasn't that happened?
I don't think that's not happened. I think there has been an effort to do that. If you look at every level, what the Chinese are talking about is they have a right to be there, given the amount of trade that goes through there. I think they also talk about the peaceful nature of Chinese missions. They just celebrated the 10-year anniversary of the anti-piracy missions, and they talk about China providing public goods and all of that. So there is an effort to do that. But what they also realize, to my sense, to my knowledge, is that there is a structural security dilemma here. And it's going to be very hard to navigate that. The only way to navigate that is that once our capacity increases and our presence in the Indian Ocean is normalized, that it's no longer headline news that a Chinese vessel, submarine has popped up in the Indian Ocean, or PLA Navy ships are docking in Sri Lanka or somewhere like that, when it's no longer this abnormal activity, that's when the Indians will really start talking to us about this. Until then, yes, we can talk about marine resource exploitation and all of that. And those track two dialogues on that level at least are happening. whether they actually translate into something has a lot to do with India's willingness. Because China's capacity will grow over the next 5, 7, 10 years. And once that capacity grows, those ships have to go somewhere. And they will come to the Indian Ocean. This is where much of its trade flows. This has also got deep security interests. So they will. And I think from a Chinese point of view, they've tried to convince the Indians. But I think their logic is that once capacity and activity increases, there would be less need to convince them to talk to us. They will also want to talk to us.
Okay, well, on that not at all ominous note, thank you very much, Manoj and Shabani.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on All Things Policy.
We'd love to hear what you think about this chat. Check us out at our Twitter handle at @TakshashilaInst on or our Quora space, All Things Policy. For the latest analysis and research on technology, strategy and economic affairs, visit our website at takshashila.org.in and tune in for our next episode.
Hey, hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach Podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week. Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.